My name is Jessica Austin, and my date of birth is 10/1/1984.
Welcome to the project, Jessica. I'm really happy to have you in it. Again, it's known as Life During the Pandemic in Kentucky, and it's a project to accumulate an archive of personal experiences of the pandemic. It's really important, this ongoing thing that we've got going, because we're now at a different stage of the pandemic. I'm sure, as you recognize, with vaccines and a new presidential administration with different ways of handling it. So, I mean, I do think it's important to see that, you know, we've gone from one time of the pandemic to another, and I'm sure there'll be other things once we get herd immunity. The whole idea is, so I'm going to be interviewing until the pandemic is basically over with. So that means there's going to be a lot of time out there and a lot of personal experiences. Yeah. So, let me ask you first, describe who you were, Jessica, and what you were doing prior to your knowledge of the gravity of the COVID virus.
So I was an epidemiologist at the Green River District Health Department in Owensboro, Kentucky, and we were a regional health department or a district, so I covered 7 counties in western, northwestern Kentucky, I guess you could say. And I had been in that position for about 8 years, 8 or 9 years prior to COVID. Yeah. And you know, at home, I am a mother of 3 and have been married for 10 years and live just in a small community in McLean County, Kentucky.
Yeah. I have a lot of family that's not in McLean County, but they're just over the border. I don't know if you know St. Martin's Parish and some of the other ones off Cowan Road. So I'm really familiar with that part of the country. It's really lovely.
Yes.
So describe the abrupt change once you did realize it was actually a pandemic and coming really to this part of the country even. So how did that abruptly change your life? And then you can kind of pull that up until now.
Sure. So I worked actually a part-time schedule prior to COVID. And because I do have little ones at home, I was working 4 days a week. And, you know, I had a pretty leisurely schedule. I'll be honest, I really enjoyed my job. It was super flexible. And, you know, we had started hearing rumblings of, you know, this virus in Wuhan, China. And I'll be honest, you know, we've had some things come and go in the 9 years I had been at the health department and been in this role. And so, you know, I had tons of friends calling from out of state and different areas that know what I do. And what are your thoughts? What do you think? And, you know, I was like, I would be honest and say I didn't really know, but I also, I think, probably played it down a little bit. Like, yeah, you know, this might be like, you know, we saw MERS and some other things in years past. And even Ebola, you know, was a huge undertaking at the health department in preparation and preparedness phases for that. And, you know, we really, especially in the rural area where we were, we never, thank goodness, had to really deploy a lot of those plans or things that we had established for that. And so I think with those lenses, it was kind of like, I don't know, you know, it's over there and hopefully it's not going to become an issue. And then real quickly, you know, I remember January, February, we were doing a lot of meetings with local businesses that were really concerned about their business continuity. And you know, as a local health department, we get a lot of our guidance from the CDC mainly. And so we're reading and trying to educate ourselves enough to educate these businesses and a lot of community leaders and things like that. And so the month of February was becoming more intense. And I recall, you know, many a time sitting down with our director of the health department and, you know, kind of just making plans and looking at where we were and who all we needed to meet with to discuss these early, you know, masking, not masking, all of these things that were big. And I decided to start working 5 days a week because it was becoming more than I could get finished in those 4 days. And so in March of 2020, early on, I decided to go ahead and start working 5 days a week. And then I believe we had the first positive case that we had here in the Green River District, I believe was, I want to say March 18th, possibly. And of course, I got a phone call at night and in the middle of dinner, and I'm trying to find something to write on. And I think I had a crayon and a piece of construction paper, and I'm jotting down, you know, information from a provider, and I have a phone number of an individual to contact. And so I was really nervous. I called the director and was like, well, I think we've got our first case. And I have done these investigations many times on different reportable diseases, but you can imagine the buildup. We've already seen positive cases, you know, across the U.S. And it was kind of like, okay, it's here. Before I went to bed that night, I had a second call of our second positive case. And so the next morning, I'm coming into work, and I was overwhelmed immediately just with the questions. What do we do? What did they say? Where have they been? And so we established a pretty small team. I had a team already that of nurses that I worked with all the time doing investigations, but I kind of pulled together a small group, and we started doing our contact investigation. Oh,
you still there? There you go.
I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay. Don't worry about it. If I have to do it again, it doesn't matter.
Okay. I was trying some. Okay. All right. So anyway, so we kind of developed a small team and, you know, started doing our contact investigation of those two cases. And pretty quickly, it just was so labor intensive. And there was so much being asked of the local health department from my perspective.
Were those cases people who had traveled, or were they in nursing homes, or what was the?
They had, one had traveled out of the country, and the other one had traveled, like, just, you know, around, you know, tri-state area kind of thing. Yeah. I think they'd been maybe to Ohio, or, you know, had done some general travel, and she had been having symptoms kind of for a while off and on. So it was really hard to pinpoint when her onset date was. Yeah. I recall that. I mean, just immediately I felt like the health department was really being stretched resource wise, with the individuals. We're a small health department, even though we're actually larger than many, because we are a district, we cover seven counties. So we were able to pull, you know, staff from all seven counties to assist when needed. But it was a lot of people were looking at local health departments to make some pretty big decisions. And it was very overwhelming. I'll say really quick, we got just emotionally, mentally overwhelmed. I think that was more of the perspective from local health departments. You know, I know a lot of nurses and healthcare workers, and I think that they were physically and emotionally overwhelmed, you know, with these, you know, patients that they had to care for. But I think it's often overlooked and missed what, you know, was going on at the local health departments and all that was being asked of them. And I'll tell you, one day early on, within the first few weeks after, first week probably after we had our initial, our first confirmed case, I had an individual call and pretty much accuse me that, like, I mean, verbatim, she said, there's blood on your hands because we, you know, didn't enforce like strict, which we didn't have the authority to tell a business they had to close, you know, but that's how people were calling us and they were just, you know, and so it was really emotionally and mentally draining every day because people were looking at us in the hospital, you know, the hospitals were looking at the health department for guidance and recommendations for certain things like around visitation and masking and different things like that. And, you know, so those things were very, very overwhelming. And we immediately like kind of established in the local health department, we use a lot of incident command structure and things like that. And we established our, you know, incident command structure. And we had a small group of leadership that moved into our really large conference room so that we could social distance, but still be kind of in a space where we could work together.
Yeah.
And I sat in that room for 8 months, I guess, from March until the end of September is when I left the health department, but I never went back to my office. In fact, we said it was like a time capsule, a few of us, because we left everything that we were working on there. And I think I went into my office maybe twice in that time frame to grab a paper or to pull a file that I needed to reference. But so it was crazy. It was so crazy. And just, I think the portion that of the response that I dealt with most was like, you know, there were so many questions from people like, what do we do? What do we do? We didn't really know. We had these best case scenarios and, you know, different things like that. But I think then it moved into this overwhelming number of cases. And we had some rough weeks in the first 6 months or so. But it seems like after I left the health department, the magnitude of the number of cases, you know, grew tremendously in that time as well. So I always, you know, really felt for them because it was really stressful on us. But I think we were trying to, I think, you know, the saying is build the plane while you're flying it at the same time. And we were doing a whole lot of that. Just kind of going on the fly, like this is what we think is probably best, but we don't know. And so that was really, really stressful. And you know, I think they, like I said before, they were looking to public health to, you know, police things that we weren't used to policing, not epidemiology obviously, but like our environmentalists were asked to police these businesses, whether, you know, if they were requiring masking and you know, social gatherings couldn't be, you know, more than 10 people. And it was just, there were so many different facets of it that the health department had their hand in. And meanwhile, you know, we had a very small workforce to do those sort of things. And the state of Kentucky did, you know, provide support in that we were able to hire a lot of disease investigators and contact tracers to assist us in that portion of the outbreak. And that was very helpful, but it also, you know, added a huge burden on top of our team that had kind of fumbled through and figured out, well, then we had to pull away and try to train these people to do, you know, how to fly this plane that we're still trying to build, you know, and they're adding different pieces and parts to it as we move along. So, it was definitely something I'll never forget for sure. And I developed some bonds with the individuals that I worked with, because I'm sure you can imagine there were a lot of days with tears, just because we could never do enough. You know, at the end of the day, it's like, I really need to stay, but I have a family to get home to. And so it was stressful.
So like during this time, what was going on for your family in terms of the kids switching their way of getting their schooling and that sort of thing? What ages are your children?
My children are 2 at the time, 2, 5 and six they were when this all kind of started. And so I only had one in school at the time, and she was in first grade. And, you know, at the end of March, they closed schools. And so she went to this virtual learning. And, you know, I think them, the teachers and us, were like, okay, this will be, you know, a temporary thing. Yes. And I think we were living each week thinking, next week we're going back to school. Next week we're going back to school.
Well, the president was saying it was going to be over with by Easter. Yeah,
yes, yes. And so I think we just kind of got through, you know. And then at the end of the school year, I realized my first grader really couldn't read very well. And, you know, some milestones that I was concerned about as a parent. And meanwhile, I've devoted, you know, the majority of my attention to my job, and that kind of bled over into the summer. They weren't in school, so that was a blessing, that one less thing to worry about. But as we kind of ventured back to start, you know, looking back to getting back into school, I started worrying again. You know, we were reading some at home, but in the summertime, you know, we have a pool. And so we were swimming and enjoying the time that we could together. And I will say that was a blessing for family life, is it slowed down a lot. And so we did have more time to just be us together at home. But my husband's a farmer, and so his work really never stopped. And my schedule never changed. And I think that was something else that, like, even at the end of the school year, a lot of the teachers and a lot of the assignments and things, it seemed like, were geared more towards, they were just expecting most parents were home because most everything was shut down.
Yeah.
And I was working more and harder than I had in my whole life. And so that was hard, because I'm a really involved parent, and I, you know, try to be involved in my mother's a school teacher. And so she's an administrator now, but and she really filled in and helped quite a bit too, but I still felt like I was missing out, and there was a lot going on at home that I wasn't really providing the attention that I typically would. Mm-hmm. And so that went through the summer, and we started back to school virtually. And I had a kindergartner, and so we went back and forth with that, you know, should we send her? Should we hold her back another year? Having an older sister, she was ready. You know, she had seen what school was all about, and she'd been in preschool, and she was ready. And so we thought, well, we're going to send her, you know, I mean, send her to the computer. And I'll be honest, she's struggled. She's not enjoyed it, really. And I hate, that's been a disappointment. She's really shy, and so she doesn't like to get on the video screen. She'll do her work, but she will not interact with her peers on the Zoom or, you know, the video calls. So she's warmed up over the months. I think they did go for a week in person in October, and then since Christmas, they've been on this AB, like, hybrid schedule. So they've enjoyed transitioning back to that. But having two in school now has been really difficult. And that was part of what pushed my decision to leave the health department at the time. It was more about my family. I loved my job. Yeah. But I was feeling really torn about giving everything I had to my job and not so much to my family. And with the ages that they are, they're just young, and I just felt like they needed a little bit more mom attention. And so when the health department got to a place, they had hired a new epidemiologist. And I thought, you know, if any time, this is probably a good time that I could, you know, leave without a huge, you know, a shoveling of everything, because I had been there for a while.
Well, I mean, you can't have guilt going in both directions. You're guilty about because you don't do all your job, and you're guilty about you don't be more with your family. That is really a nightmare situation.
It really is.
And you got to know yourself and know just how much you could take, and, you know, be smart enough to change before it gets too bad. I mean, you don't need to walk around a big bunch of PTSD, as so many healthcare workers are doing right now.
I can totally see that. Yes.
Let me ask you a little bit about Do you think the pandemic has been politicized?
I do, yeah, in some ways I do.
To some extent, like, if you think about that brutal presidential campaign, no matter what side you're on, I mean, a lot of it was about the coronavirus, really, and, you know, criticisms going both ways.
Right.
I guess one of the things that has always troubled me is that to do something as innocent as wearing a mask is making a political statement.
Yes. And that's, yeah, I agree. Ridiculous. And we ran into a lot of that at the health department. A lot of our calls were, y'all are socialists and you know, you're taking away our freedoms. And I'm like, oh, we're just doing our job here. We did not ask for this, you know, but, so yes, I think that it's been overly politicized and it's hard to, you know, even, know which way to go or who's being honest about what. And, I think that's really hurt the response in a lot of ways that it was so politicized and people felt like, well, I can't do that because I'm not a part of that party and or vice versa, you know. So I think that's been an increased challenge on the response for sure.
Well, and the other thing is that at some points it seems like there was almost an attempt to separate science out from the political message that was coming. Did you feel that way ever?
Yeah, I think so. Like, you mentioned like the masking and even like a lot of the treatment responses and, you know, treatment recommendations and things like that. It's like, I mean, there was so many politics and things in with that. It was hard to know, you know, what to believe and, you know, if there was science behind it or not. And it was a blur. Yeah.
I had a little problems when because I just really like Anthony Fauci, when I felt like he was just tiptoeing around and, you know, in fact, you sometimes wondered what his facial expression was behind his mask.
I know these masks have helped in that avenue.
Yes,
for sure.
Really, really. Well, let me ask you a little bit. You've talked about how you thought the results, the response locally was pretty good in your region in terms of what, well, as far as they could do, what needed to be done. How did you feel about the state level? Was that response pretty good?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the state leadership did a good job. I mean, they were upfront and it seemed like they were visible and every single day they were coming on and giving an update, especially early on. and because I did have a peek into, you know, some of the state public health side of things, because we met with them frequently and that's where we would receive a lot of our guidance from. You know, I do think that there's sometimes where politics play into things there too, on decisions of, you know, which contact tracing system we're going to use. And so-and-so wants this one. And even though we didn't like it, they were pushing it. And it was like, that's going to happen. What, you know, get on board or, you know, that's really the only choice. And so, you know, sometimes those things got a little bit frustrating. And again, I do feel like in Kentucky, a lot of things were like, your local health department will take care of that. Contact your local health department about that. And I'm sitting here, you know, we have less than 200 people on staff, way less than 200. I can't remember what we were at, but, and a lot of those are, you know, home visiting programs and people that weren't at all involved with the COVID response really. And it was kind of like, whoa, wait a minute. Like, you know, some days I wish that they may have stepped back and thought, okay, our little health departments that are very, you know, underfunded and, you know, a lot of individuals work there that make nothing. Yeah. And, you know, they were throwing a lot on them. And so sometimes I would get a little frustrated with, you know, higher level leadership because of those things. You know, they hired a lot of contract employees to do things that we've done for years, contact tracing and things like that. And yet they hired them making quite a bit more than, you know, what myself as an epidemiologist started out making, and and I know they didn't get benefits, and there's a lot of perks to working, you know, in public health, but that was something that rubbed a lot of the local staff. You know, it was just, it stung a little bit, you know, it was kind of salt in a wound. And so that was a little bit frustrating, where you felt like, oh, public health's important now because we're in a pandemic. But, you know, this stuff, we do this stuff all the time, not on quite this scale. And, you know, maybe the importance wasn't seen as important at those times. So those were things that came up that along the path, the way that I was a little bit sour about.
Did you get a lot of blowback, negative blowback because of the closures, like of businesses and restaurants?
Yes. It was one way or the other, though. You know, it was, we'd be, people are upset because we're closing places, or people are upset because we're not closing enough places, you know? And so it's both ends of the spectrum, it felt like, most of the time.
Yeah. Well, that's when you know you're doing a good job, if you're hitting that middle, because you've got to be able to do something. And, you know, Brashear has gotten a lot of blowback for some of this. I mean, you know, they're trying to impeach him now, for heaven's sakes.
Oh, my gosh. I'll be honest. Would it bother you if I drive?
No, as long as it doesn't bother you.
It doesn't. It doesn't at all. I may not look at you, if that's okay.
That's no. It's okay. It's absolutely supremely okay. Okay.
All right. Perfect.
Good. Wait, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I haven't followed the politics and everything so much since I left, or what's going on with Governor Brashear as much. But I think that he you know, did a great job early on, and, you know, continued to just stay true to, like, his message and to, you know, his plan and things like that. So I hate to hear that. I hadn't heard that, but I'm not surprised.
Well, we all got surprised. It only takes like 4 people to petition for impeachment, and then it happens. I mean, he's probably not going to be removed, but the Republicans are kind of threatening him, because there's so many Republicans in the state house as compared to just a Brashear, basically, as governor. So how do you feel about the national response in terms of the Trump administration? Was it pretty decent for you guys?
I mean, at the local level, I'm trying to think back. I mean, sometimes they made things a lot harder for us because of some of the off the cuff comments that you would get, you know, like, it's going to be over after Easter, or by Easter, we should be back to normal. Those sorts of comments definitely didn't do anything.
Just like,
yes, to help. And I know things have been difficult since then, like with the vaccine push out and things like that. But I can't really remember one way or the other, aside from, you know, just the I don't know how else to put it, but, you know, just the off the cuff comments constantly. It's like,
take bleach or something like that.
Yes, those sort of things. Those caused issues. And it was like, we'd get a hailstorm of phone calls the day after things like those crazy comments would occur. You know, asking if that was happening here, or if we, you know, so that complicated things at times. But we were just so, you know, focused on our little boots on the ground response and kind of the day in and day out of what we had to do, that I kind of got to where I didn't pay attention too much.
I don't want to jump too far ahead, but how's the vaccination effort going there? Do you know?
I think it's going pretty good. I'm at Owensboro Health now as an infection preventionist. And so I have a little bit of a different perspective. And I know at the hospital, they are, you know, pushing out vaccine. We're still in the 70 plus age group and healthcare workers, but it seems to be going well. And then I know that the health department has partnered with the school systems, and they have either completed or started, I think, the first round of vaccines for like all the local schools. So that's been really good for teachers to go ahead and get those vaccines in hopes that, you know, it may provide a little protection to keep the numbers down in the school system so that we can get kids back.
Those teachers are older, you know?
Yes, yeah.
Jefferson County is not going back to regular school until all the teachers are vaccinated. There's been some criticism about that, but tell you the truth, when I think about somebody teaching at 65 or something like that, geez, I'm going to have my vaccination first. I don't know about you. Have you been able to get vaccinated?
Yes. As a hospital employee, I was able to get my vaccine when I started there. And so that was a blessing, and that, you know, I was excited. So
which one did you get?
The Moderna.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm gonna get rid of this.
That's okay.
So you got the Moderna. The Moderna, have you gotten your second shot yet?
Yes, I did.
Were you sick afterwards? Because my daughter, boy, this second one, she got the Pfizer. It was a doozy.
I was sick, yeah. And I never get sick. Like, I never have side effects on it, anything. So I thought I would be fine. It was about a third of the girls in the office that I work in now kind of felt bad. And you know, two thirds didn't. And so I was like, oh, I'm sure I'll be fine. I was probably the last one to get my second dose because I had just started at the hospital a little over a month ago. And I woke up in the middle of the night and I just felt awful. But it only lasted for, you know, about 18 hours or so. And it wasn't so bad. I took some Motrin and it was not so bad that I ended up going to work. I kind of pushed through and was like, I just started, I can't call in. And I had a little low grade fever, but they said that was expected, you know. And so
Fauci said he was sick for 36 hours after the second one.
Yeah. It seems to be pretty common. So, but it wasn't any fun, I'll tell you that. But I hope it doesn't deter people, you know, from getting it.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the pharmacists that I work with at the hospital now, they say that's a good thing. Like, it's showing your immune response. And so, you know, it's a good thing in a sense. I mean,
yeah. So, have any of your fellow employees been reluctant to get the vaccine?
Yeah, there have been a handful. Like, I haven't been there very long, so I haven't really, you know, have any strong relationships at this point. But I have heard a few say, you know, that they're going to wait just to kind of make sure and see. And some of them are younger, and I think they're probably still, you know, considering having more children, and that's kind of weighed into their decision a little bit. And I don't blame them for that by any means. Because there are some unknowns there, you know. I don't think they've done any tests on pregnant women and things like that. So, but there haven't been any like blatant, like, I'm not getting it because it's what, you know, whatever you hear. A few of them have gotten it have said, you know, a friend or a distant family member's, you know, said crazy things, you know, like you've got a chip implanted in you now and all that crazy stuff.
The stuff they come up with is just amazing, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it's comical at times for sure. So
now you've talked about this a little bit, but has anything good happened to you as a result of the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I do think that, I mean, I have young children, but we're pretty active and involved, like in our church and with activities at school and extracurricular type things. My kids play sports. And so even at a young age, well, my oldest, who is 7 now, she plays soccer, and their soccer season was canceled in the spring. And we were in the midst of playing basketball. I was coaching her basketball team, and they canceled the rest of the season. So she was really disappointed.
Yeah.
But my husband and I both like would sit down at night and be like, it's kind of nice, like not running to practice not, you know, having to run everywhere. And so that was early on. I think we really enjoyed like just a little bit more family time.
Yeah.
And that was enjoyable for sure. For a while at least.
Yeah.
We miss it now.
I can imagine. Has there been much racial unrest there?
No, I mean, I'm sure if you're familiar with the area, McLean County especially is not very diverse. And so, we haven't had much. I know back in the summer, there was a little bit, I think, here in Owensboro, not anything major, but some protests and, just some sit-ins and things like that of individuals just trying to raise awareness for, equality and the Black Lives Matter and things like that. So, but nothing alarming by any means.
We had quite a bit, of course, in Louisville. I live close to downtown. I got to tell you, I don't really go off talking about fake news, but sometimes I would think, I just drove down there. It doesn't look bad to me. It was just really played up for this sensationalism. And, oftentimes when something happened, that destruction of private property had nothing to do with the demonstrations. It had to do with actually things like the rising tide of homelessness, because I'm telling you, that's very evident here. People losing their jobs. It's over at the school where I used to teach, the community college, I mean, you're literally stepping over sleeping bodies to get into some of the office buildings. So it's just, do you think that the rise in racial tension has anything to do with the pandemic?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I think some have said, and maybe you found this to be true, that it's not a causation, but it's in some ways a catalyst, because if you've lost your job or your school is shut down, you don't know where your rent's coming, and you're sitting there watching the George Floyd tape over and over again, that it just makes you more likely to hit the streets, really. And for some Black people that I've talked to, I mean,
yeah, I can see that for sure.
And the numbers for Blacks are just, so much higher in terms of people suffering from the COVID virus. As I've interviewed some people, run up against to more resistance to the vaccine, because of the racist history of, U.S. public health in some ways toward Blacks, going way back to the Tuskegee thing and that sort of thing. So,
yes. Well, on that note, this is kind of jumping back somewhat, but I will say there was a period in the response from our health department where we have a growing international community of refugees.
Oh yeah.
And
it
became a huge issue. We went through probably a month period where we had more Burmese individuals that were testing positive for COVID.
Well, how they live in terms of multiple generations and on the front line of the kind of jobs they do,
Absolutely. Yeah. We were working really close with meat packing plants here in the region and, trying to get them different transportation options, because they would all pile into one vehicle and go to work. They pay one person to drive them to work every day. And
I'm really glad we hit on this, because I wondered about that.
Yes. And then, from our perspective, trying to get information and education and materials and get them to quarantine and get them to provide contacts and things like that was very challenging. But the health department was so lucky in that we had individuals on staff that speak Burmese, because we do work with these populations so regularly. With our, our HANDS program and different clinic programs that our international center works with us on. And so we were definitely, I would say, as prepared as any health department could have been, but it still was very overwhelming and very challenging because of the communication barrier, and also just because of a lot of the cultural norms. All of the individuals on staff for us were female, and sometimes males within different cultures don't really, take instruction from females and things like that. So trying to find trusted males within the community that could share the message for us and things like that. It was very interesting and very stressful when that occurred, because we had so many, you know, the names would start coming through, and it was pretty evident, you know, that, oh me, these are, you know, some did speak English, but most of them were non-English speaking. And so it just added another layer of frustration and challenge.
But how did HIPAA laws work with that?
Well, within public health investigation, as long as you are using information to respond to a public health outbreak, there are some leniency on HIPAA. Yeah. But, it, you know, these people luckily were on staff with us. And so most of them had had HIPAA compliance training and things like that already. But the individuals, you know, that we utilized, it was usually we would have to call the positive and ask them if they would be, you know, willing for us to talk to so-and-so else, you know, get kind of permission. So it did. It was challenging, but due to the nature and the fact that we were in a public health outbreak, there are some there's some verbiage in HIPAA laws and that kind of state that you can share some information, you know, with reference to responding to an outbreak.
Do you still know any of the English speakers in that group, the women that are doing that? I would love to interview one of those.
I definitely, could get you in touch.
I would love that. That would be a massive favor. I really would appreciate that, because they've got a unique perspective and just
absolutely
the culture. Yeah. I also want to interview your husband, by the way, because I have interviewed very few farmers. I would love to interview him. So I'm giving you a lot of tasks here. Let's talk about 50 to 100 years from now. When analysts and historians look at these tapes and study this pandemic, what do you think is going to be their take on things?
I mean, knowing how we look back at history sometimes, I'm sure they'll either think that we were all idiots and we should have, or, you know, hopefully they'll be able to glean some lessons, you know, from what we've learned. And, you know, I look back at early on when, and I'll say in public health, we've always said, don't wear masks. It provides a false sense of security. It causes you to touch your face more often and blah, blah, blah. You know, I can remember that, you know, when people would call and ask about wearing masks for other reasons. And it typically was like, if you are not immunocompromised, you should not wear a mask.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you touch your face more often. And, and we all know you do. I mean, we've all been wearing masks for, you know, nearly a year, some of us now. And you do touch your face more often. But I think that common sense will tell you, if you're talking or if you sneeze or cough and you have a mask on, those droplets are going to be contained in that mask, as opposed to going over the checkout counter or where, you know. You know, I do see, like, that maybe someday they're going to laugh at us for, like, having to enforce mask wearing, and why couldn't we just say, hey, wear a mask? Because it is kind of common sense. Like, yeah, that makes sense. If you're wearing a mask, then your droplets are going to be contained. But, I try to think back on things that we've seen and read about from the last, you know, the Spanish flu pandemic. Yes. And I can remember doing planning for this when I first started at the health department. One of the first trainings I went to was like on pandemic planning.
Yeah.
And they were talking about like mass fatalities, and that they would might have to just like start digging, you know, graves, individual graves, but just on a large scale, because they wouldn't be able to have room to do. And I'm so glad, knock on wood, for the most part, it hasn't gotten to that here, you know, but, and hopefully maybe there's some things that we've learned along the way that these simple public health measures really do work. And, you know, social distancing, I think we did prove that that worked. We did flatten the curve. And yes, it's continued to linger on, but I think it could have been so much worse there back in the summer when we were starting to see these peaks, and when we, everybody was really diligent about social distancing and, you know, trying to avoid contact with others and things like that. So I hope they look and think, well, they did a pretty good job. But
you know, for Kentucky, I mean, we do look better. I mean, you compare us to Indiana or Tennessee right now, we look fabulous, to be honest with you. Probably the best state in the South, at least, I would say. I want to ask you one more thing about, you know, there's been a real difficult thing for people that live alone or are in nursing homes or that sort of thing, is this being away from their families and also just not getting any physical touch. No handshakes, no pats on the back, you know, no hugs, certainly. And then, you know, often having to die alone. And the idea of just even funerals, so sad for family. Have you guys experienced much of that? I know McLean County got a nursing home.
When I was still at the health department.
There was a nursing home.
Yes, and yes. They got hit pretty hard a few months ago. And, you know, we were talking to a lot of these individuals at the health department when I was doing the disease investigation piece. And it was heartbreaking, you know, talking to people and, you know, they lost their husband or wife and, you know, they were still in quarantine. And so we would, you know, say you can't have the funeral until you're out of quarantine. And, you know, it was awful. And then the thought of people, dying alone. And I've said multiple times, I do wonder about, you know, I look at data and statistics a lot, and I do wonder about statistics around like suicide and what we're going to see in those areas, you know, when we're able to kind of look up from the pandemic and see what else is going on around us, because I do think that those are things that will have increased during this time because people are so alone and
child abuse because kids are not going.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think there's going to be a lot of after effects and things that we look at in hindsight and think, you know, those might be some lessons that maybe in 100 years, someone can glean from and say, okay, you know, yes, we need to take these steps, but here's some other things that we cannot neglect, you know, for the sake of the pandemic or whatever. So I really hope, I mean, I think education is one of those too. I really wonder what this is going to have, like the effect that this is going to have on our students and our youth. I mean, I think it's still to be seen for sure, but I've been really struck by that, you know, because I am a very involved parent and my daughter has struggled to read and things like that. And I think about parents or children that have parents that aren't that involved and they may not even look at their work. And I mean, a second grader, you've got to look and you really are there doing it with them. And the Absolutely. Whole time, it's a full-time job.
I'm doing it 5 days a week. Believe me, I know what you're talking about for two kids. So it's all
well, confusing. I'll tell you, I took a job so that I could do that. And I only stayed for like 2 months because I was like, whoa, this is not good. I mean, I couldn't do it. I mean, it was really wearing on my relationship with my children because I want them to get it done and sit here and pay attention. And they, you know, they flop around. And of course, for mom, they're not going to listen like they would their teacher.
Yeah.
And it was very stressful. And that became another, like, after I left the health department, I had a lot of regrets. I was like, oh, I can't do this. I was working in the school system when I left. And so they let me bring the girls to my office and I pretty much was just helping them with their schoolwork for the most part. I had other little
shy kids like your kindergartner. I mean, social interaction is really important.
Absolutely. Yes. And so I quickly realized, I don't know if this is for me. I felt like we were ending every day on negative, like mom yelled at me for, you know, not getting my reading done or this or that. And it was just, I'm like, I just don't want to do that. So we kind of went back. So I was like, okay. and we went back to a sitter with that stuff. And so it seems to be a better fit. But I do think that our kids are going to be, you know, this kind of lapse in education, even though I know they're learning, and my children have definitely improved and made progress, but I don't think it's the same kind of progress they would have made.
Right. And there'll be a lot of studies of this cohort group for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. My last question actually is, after we pass this more acute phase of the pandemic, maybe when we've all gotten vaccines and have herd immunity, what do you think the new normal is going to be?
We talk about that a lot. I don't think that we will ever go back to the way we were before. I look at, you know, businesses that have moved to pretty much a virtual model for working from home. I know U.S. Bank is a huge employer in the Owensboro area, and I think 90%+ of their workforce is working from home. Maybe not quite that much, but I know it's a huge portion. And I think that if they can prove that they were just as efficient or more efficient, that we probably will see a lot more telework and remote work.
Yeah. But even things like buffets forward. And salad bars, you know? I don't know if I'll ever feel anything about a buffet.
I mean, and I know, right? There's a lot of things that I used to think about a lot because I worked in public health and I did disease investigation for foodborne illness. Yeah. And other things that I think other people have the same perspective now. I'm like, this is gross, people. This is gross.
I kept telling you that all those years, right?
Yes. Yes. But yeah, I don't know that we'll, I think it'll be a new normal for sure.
Example, will you be as quick to hug somebody that you don't really know?
Will I be willing to hug somebody? Is that what you said?
Like people sometimes meet and they used to just hug each other, shake hands and whatever. I mean, do you think people would be more hesitant about that?
I'm sure some people will. Yeah, I'm sure some people probably will. But
mask, are they with us to stay?
I hope not. But I do think they will definitely be more socially acceptable. Yeah. I do. I think that we will see people in masks. And I don't think that's a horrible thing. I think it's a good thing for a lot of people. Like if you're not feeling good and you have like absolutely no food or whatever, and you've just got to go to the grocery, wear your mask. You know, I think that would be appropriate and appreciated. And I hope people won't be so scared to do those types of things.
Yes.
I think it'll be interesting to see what the new normal is for sure.
That's all my questions. Do you have anything else you'd like to say?
Oh, I can't really think of anything other than just, you know, I mean, like I said, I think so many people thought, and that's what I would say to people in 100 years. If there's an inkling of something like this, you know, try to take it seriously as much as you can. Because I think the better prepared that communities are on the front end, you know, the first few months especially will be less daunting. Sense that we can just be kind to other and not maybe make it such a politicized thing that, you know, everyone has their opinions. But I think at the end of the day, you know, if we can just be kind and considerate and understand that even though you're not scared, that doesn't mean that someone else isn't scared or shouldn't be scared because they are living a different, you know, a different life. They may have, you know, a child with special needs or a parent with its, you know, on cancer treatments or something. Oh, yeah. And so that's what I try to do. Even though I know I was not been high risk, I've not really been fearful of getting COVID, but I wouldn't visit my grandparents because I would be devastated if I got them sick, you know, things like that. So I hope if nothing else, we can learn that, like just to love each other a little more in these tough times.
Well, it's been a sensational interview, and I'm glad you haven't had a wreck. I've been kind of praying to St. Christopher the whole time this is going on. But it's been a wonderful interview. And I really do want to interview your husband. If you can find me one of the Corinne, I would just, that would be a wonderful perspective to have in this project. There's no two ways about it. So thank you so, so much. I'll be sending you that release form. Probably get it in the next, in the next few days. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, have a good night. Drive safely.
You too. Thank you.
All right. Thank
bye-bye. You. Bye.
Bye-bye.